program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers, and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. It is Friday, March 12, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we answer your calls and emails. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or right now, if you want to get on the queue, go ahead and go to geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and then click on Send a Message. And now get into our email box and we'll answer your call and emails during the show all day today here on Geek Speak for the next hour. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam. Hello, geeks. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Morning.
Morning.
Your questions and comments are welcome all day today, for the next hour today on Geek Speak. And you're welcome to go ahead and get in our queue. Go to geekspeak.org, click on the geeks, and then click on send a message. But right now we're going to do a little bit of news before we start answering your calls. Geeks, do we have some geek technical problems this morning? Sean, you look dazed and confused.
I'm just trying to find our 800 number.
Ah! 1-800-655-5877 is the 800 number. And the phone number is 476-2800. This morning, Miles, Sean, hi. Miles, please start us off with our news.
Just some interesting statistics for folks out there. Manufacturing a PC takes 1.8 metric tons of raw material. PC.
What?
What?
Yep. Although, just to put this into context, 1.5 metric tons of that is water.
Okay. So 0.3 metric tons it takes, and that's about 300 kilograms. Because a metric ton's 1,000 kilograms.
Or it is 300
kilograms. It is 333 kilograms, right? So isn't that a little excessive? So if we take the water away, assuming that the water can be recycled... Let's say it can.
Who knows if it can or not.
Okay, but let's assume that all that water can get recycled. We're talking about a PC at home, probably the monitor and the keyboard and the machine itself. Maybe they added the printer in. Who knows? The materials to create that thing, which weighs probably 6 kilograms, the entire thing, it takes 330 kilograms to actually produce it. That's pretty scary.
Or 300 kilograms, yeah.
300 kilograms.
660 pounds for folks who have to use the imperial system.
Right, that horrible imperial system that we use. That's a lot of weight. A lot of waste,
but
it sounds like.
They're saying there is an environmental cost to it, and it's a strong argument to recycle your computers and especially donate them as opposed to just tossing them in the garbage.
And if you're in Santa Cruz County, we did a little article a while ago about resources for recycling computers. But in general, just reach your refuse department, whatever county you're in, and they normally have programs, pretty good programs, for making sure waste does not go somewhere bad, but is dealt with properly. The first thing you want to do before even doing that, though, is to try to find a company or somebody that wants that old machine to be reused as it is, instead of trying to recycle the parts. Miles, thanks for that. I'm going to go ahead and jump back into you, though, Miles. Can you go ahead and tell me your next item of the day?
Microsoft has re-released a patch to fix some problems. It released a patch. For a fix for an Office XP flaw, and it was considered an important vulnerability, but in the last 24 hours, a new vulnerability was found that's leveled as severity critical. And so...
What color is that?
It's probably orange.
They should have a color chart for versus...
So
it is a red day.
Go get those patches. If you got Windows, as usual, go get those patches.
You know, I'm going to mention right now then, because it's perfect in line. The entire month of April we're going to be devoting on Geek Speak. We're going to be devoting on, for security purposes, viruses and spam. And we're going to be dealing with your email in April. How to protect your computer from email burn viruses and other viruses, probably, including firewalls. We'll also be talking a lot about spam filtering and how to deal with that. And the Trojans and things, not necessarily viruses, but spyware that gets installed on your machine, how to get rid of that. So look forward to the month of April here on GeekSpeak. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. Sean, I'm going to jump to you for a news item now. Thank you, Miles, for those two.
Yes, Hitachi has announced a 400 gigabyte hard drive.
That's a big hard drive.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Traditional hard drives right now, about 120 is our max, 150 gigs.
Oh, you can get 200.
You can get 200 gigabyte.
Right. Yeah.
So they're releasing a 4.
Yeah, you can get larger than that, but this is the first 400 gigabyte hard drive. It is the Hitachi Death Star 7K 400. Which blows my mind because whenever I see the word Death Star, that's IBM.
Uh-huh.
So as people may not know, IBM sold their hard drive business to Hitachi.
So Hitachi's doing them now.
So Hitachi's making them now.
Are they better?
Well, I don't know. I've never used a Hitachi drive.
Okay.
I reviewed a Hitachi SCSI drive back at Maximum PC Magazine many years ago, so I don't know how they are now.
You know, I've just always felt that IBM drives crash. It's like this thing that stuck in my mind, but I don't know if that's really true.
No, IBM drives were good drives.
Okay, good.
They did have a problem with the 75 GXP, the Death Star. Lots of big problems with that. Failure rate, I guess, was very high. And there's still reverberations of that today. So I think there's some court cases and there's a class action lawsuit. But I would think that these newer drives have solved those issues, especially since they've figured out what those issues were to begin with. But the 400 gigabyte drive is 7,200 RPM spindle speed, which means that the disks rotate at 7,200 rotations per minute. It has an average seek time of 8.5 milliseconds, which is the time it takes to find a piece of data on the drive, which is very, very quick. I don't know what the throughput of the drive is, but it has an aerial density of 61.7 gigabits per square inch.
And that's how they're getting that 400
gigabits. Yeah, so it's got 5 platters, 10 giant magnetoresistive recording heads. That's GMR. And when you add all those billions of bits per square inch and platters and the read heads up, you pretty much come up with 400 gigabytes.
Wow. That's a big drive. Any reason not to get a big drive like that? The cost, I would assume. It's probably going to be a little expensive.
It's going to be expensive. And, you know, I don't see the price. I'm not quite sure what that's going to be.
Well, we'll have to get a look at one of these drives. You know, I love it, Sean, when you get into hard drives, specifically hard drives or even processors, your geek babble. If I'm not with it in the beginning,
yeah,
I lose it, and I have to catch up. So for a second there, I glanced away from you and came back, and you were saying aerial density. I'm like, well, I know what that is.
But if you don't, actually, I wrote an article that's available on geekspeak.org, and I discuss what aerial density is in detail.
You discuss how hard drives work.
How hard drives work and what the different connector technologies
and
are.
And I think a layman can actually read that and actually grasp.
That's what I was hoping for. Yeah.
It's a good article. So again, geekspeak.org, there's an article about hard drives.
And for those of you who don't know what 400 gigabytes is, that will give you about 400 hours of standard TV programming could fit on a 400 gigabyte hard drive, 45 hours of high definition TV programming, and more than 6,500 hours of quality high digital music.
Wait, how many hours?
6,500 hours worth of music could fit on.
Wow, that's a lot of music.
Yeah.
Now, Sean, could you fill that 400 gig drive?
I could fill a quarter of it.
Good enough. Thank you, Sean.
Yeah.
Miles.
There's an anti-denial of service attack tool that's being released by a company called Symbiote.
Okay, denial of service, what is that?
When people have found... This was a couple of years ago when Yahoo was taken off the net because of hackers, and I think Amazon was taken
down. So it's a hacking?
What it is you're sending a whole bunch of requests to a server, making a whole bunch of communication requests, and it's so... But a lot of them are bogus, or all of them are bogus. But they look like legitimate requests.
Okay.
So because you're... It's like if someone is constantly calling your house.
It's equivalent to like a post office... Someone's at the post office, they're serving people, and if everyone all of a sudden came in and asked a question, like for directions, all of a sudden the post office wouldn't work because there'd be 1,000 people in the lobby all saying, where's the nearest bus stop?
Yeah, and if
it's
no
totally
was,
useless information, right. But it basically blocks the post office from being worked. And that's in denial of service, and you do that against any kind of server that's available on the net, you can do that too. And there's really no way to protect from it. So this company has a new way of protecting how?
Well, no, they're not protecting it, because usually you have just passive guards against it. You have some algorithm to check to see whether or not there's an overabundance of requests from a particular host or the type of request is unusual. This one is more active in that it will actually seek out and attack the computer that's attacking it.
Wow. So basically, assuming all the people that went into the post office in this analogy, this made-up analogy, asking for bus directions, had red shoes on, then this software would basically start attacking those kind of people.
Would start grabbing people by the scruff of the neck that had red shoes on and throwing them out. There's a lot of controversy over this in the security industry as to whether or not it's okay to do that, especially because it violates some hacking laws that are on the books right now. And the justification is, well, we're being attacked first, and just sitting there as a target isn't acceptable.
I guess the real if you take that analogy, it's actually if the post office then sent out troops to go find the person that's telling them to go in there. There's somebody on the street saying, go into the post office right now and ask them for directions. We're doing that. So they would go out there and they'd grab that person and they'd beat them up or something. That's kind of what it's doing.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Basically go after it and either take away all the bandwidth or use some exploit to crash the remote user's computer. The idea being that if someone has a virus, knock them off the net. But as I said, there's a lot of controversy with that because you're going to be automatically hacking someone else's box.
Yeah, and you're getting to that realm of artificial intelligence to some degree. Something's just happening automatically for you, triggered by some event. That's pretty complex. But we'll go back to that thing about attacking somebody's machine. A lot of these denial of service attacks, the way they actually are getting executed is somebody produces a Trojan or something, some kind of virus that goes to people's computers, and then their computer is actually used as one of the requests.
Right, when you click on an email attachment, many times it'll install some tool, a backdoor for someone to launch a lot of the
viruses that we mentioned on GeekSpeak that are not mentioned in the... Well, yeah, a lot of viruses that are happening nowadays do that. They produce this Trojan horse, and then someday in the future some website will go down. And the basic idea is that everybody that gets infected on those machines will now be one of the tools that take down another server. So if that other server now installs the software from this company, then that software will go and attack those people's machines. And theoretically, there will be a vulnerability in the machine because how would they have gotten the virus in the first place? And they'll damage the machine somehow. It sounds pretty scary, especially since a virus in general, normally Trojan horse virus and stuff, if there's any prosecution, we're talking about a person with no money. So the individual people that get affected can't really get anything, like sue anybody. But now if there's a company out there that attacks your machine as a second phase of that, you get infected. No, you can't get any recourse from that because it's some hacker that's already gone to prison. But then another company comes and damages your machine further, you could theoretically sue that company. So I'm assuming this software will not last very long. That's my thought on it.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and go. We're doing GeekSpeak this morning. That's what you're listening to. My name is Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam, and we're taking your questions and comments. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. That's in the 831 area code. Or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, and that's in California. Again, 1-800-655-5877. Or you can use the Internet. Visit geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then click on Send a Message. We'll be answering your calls very shortly. Sean.
Yes, at CeBIT trade show that's coming up in Germany, Hanover, Germany. I think that's in the next couple of weeks. Victorinox, who makes the Swiss Army knife, is introducing one with a USB drive on it.
Cool.
So, I mean, these things have everything on them.
Right. Why not have some memory?
Why not have a little memory stick?
Okay. So tell me what would it do for you? You'd be able to take this Swiss Army knife that you can normally open a can with, and
if you need to open a can or
cut your hand real bad on,
pull out the scissors or saw down a tree or all the other cool tools it has on it, you can then also flip out a USB drive in, plug it into your computer.
And then what can you put on
there? It holds about 64 megs or 128 megs. There's two versions.
So basically, you could go, you're at somebody's house, they've taken a whole bunch of digital pictures of friends and people of an event. You're at their house, and they've downloaded it to their computer.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I want a couple copies of that. Instead of saying, well, I'll email them to you later, which they'll never do, you just pull out your Swiss Army knife, stick it in their computer, and they'll copy it over to you.
Yep. And there you got it. So you've got memory with you all the time.
I actually wear a keychain around my neck that has only 32 megs, but thanks, Sean, for the gift. It was a nice thing. So having a Swiss Army knife makes a lot of sense.
So the 64 meg version will cost around €55. Which is about $67. And 128 megabyte version has not been announced, or price has not been announced yet. But they're hoping that they'll even get upwards to a gigabyte at some point.
I'm assuming some point they will. Cool. Memory-intensive Swiss Army knives. Miles?
This is a story for the web developers out there who are trying to make standards-compliant pages, but they're always confounded by a certain web browser called IE that is
Internet
used
Explorer.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. A man named Dean Edwards has made a style sheet that will make Internet Explorer act in a standards-compliant manner.
How?
I don't know exactly.
It's, basically, it's using all the tricks.
It's using DHTML and probably behaviors as well to get it to react normally. Or standards compliant. He's calling it IE7. But to get it, I'd recommend... This is from a Slashdot story, so go up to Slashdot and check out the link for that.
Slashdot.org if you're interested in this.
I'm going to be taking a close look at this.
Oh, I think it sounds great. Just to put this in perspective... Internet Explorer basically is the biggest web browser out there. It comes with Windows, and anybody that has a Windows machine has Internet Explorer. You actually can't remove Internet Explorer from your machine. We recommend the fight that we have against Internet Explorer from a geek's perspective is go ahead and download Mozilla or one of Mozilla's browsers. We talk about that a lot, Mozilla.org.
Or Firefox.
Yeah. Firefox is the browser standalone for Mozilla. Great browser. And the reason for that is that there's a body out there called the World Wide Web Consortium, and it's a nonprofit group that tries to organize the coding and rule set for publishing online and doing a lot of things, actually, on the web. And so, in general, they've got this standards body, this large document that specifies how HTML should be. And Internet Explorer doesn't do a very good job of following that standard.
It's not the... XHTML, it's actually the CSS, the cascading style sheets,
okay.
the presentation of the web page as opposed to the content on
so
it.
So what's happening is because Internet Explorer is such the large browser out there and doesn't support these CSS things that are really quite cool, a lot of smart people have been producing them, it's kind of damaging the CSS initiative, which is a better way, from my perspective and Miles' perspective, a better way to produce websites. So... What this article that Miles is talking about is a guy that just went, okay, let's make a document that will modify Internet Explorer, a web page document that will modify Internet Explorer on that site that will make it operate in this compliant way. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of a way of hacking Internet Explorer without actually affecting the Internet Explorer at all that's actually on the person's computer, but only for that specific site. Miles, thanks for that. I'm looking forward to that too. That'd be nice.
One problem though.
Yes.
And that is Mozilla and Firefox do not support some websites with Flash.
Right.
And if you're buying items online, sometimes the engines will not, for some reason, recognize that you're buying something.
Yeah, another thing that is really frustrating with this whole fight about Internet Explorer and other browsers is that because 90% of the browsers out there are Internet Explorer, companies will produce websites that only work in Internet Explorer, and they deal with 90% of the market. And they'll actually specifically do things that are kind of dumb because they don't really need to do that, but they'll do it anyway, that restrict the access to Internet Explorer, kind of accidentally, kind of intentionally. And what that turns into is this need for Internet Explorer, which is frustrating as all get out. So
right.
You still, I'm assuming, Sean, even though you use Firebird or use Mozilla, you still switch over to...
Well, yeah, if I'm at a site... Yeah, I visit book sites and so on, and if there's something I want to buy, I do have a problem with that. I go into their engine, and for some reason the cart doesn't get updated,
shopping cart,
you know, or I say, follow through with the transaction, and nothing happens.
And see, this is the perfect reason
why
standards
need to
exist.
And then I have to go into IE and do the same thing, and it always works.
Right. And so. That's the reason why standards need to exist. If all the browsers function the same way when you build a site, it'll work.
Right.
But instead, people are doing it Internet Explorer only.
Yeah, and
miles
just as a nice little, you know, twist of the knife and
yes.
in someone's gut. When people talk about Microsoft innovating and the whole PR campaign
sure.
there, just want to remind folks that Internet Explorer hasn't been really updated in the last 2 years.
That's a long time.
As opposed to other browsers, which have just been going leaps and bounds.
Although we're expecting Service Pack 2 for Windows XP any day. In fact, well, more talking April time frame. And that should have a lot of updates and fixes to IE. And also they're talking about adding pop-up blocking.
Cool.
Long time in coming.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Miles? Oh, that was Miles.
Sure. That was me.
Hey.
Yes, Soyo. A company out of Taiwan, I think, who produces motherboards, has created one that does not require an operating system. So if all you need is a, if you want to build your own TiVo-like device, and you want other features such as audio MP3, CD playback, or video CD playback, DVD, a DVD player, TV tuner support, that sort of thing, you can buy this motherboard, put it together, hook up your peripherals, your DVD drive and so on, and you use the BIOS of the motherboard as your guide, your menu, to drive all of this. So you never even have to install an OS if you don't want to.
Wow. So some like basic functionality that you might want on this machine
I've seen this before, actually, limited. The only thing I've really seen is the ability to play audio CDs through your computer. And what it is, when you first boot the computer up, you've got maybe 5 or 6 seconds to hit a special key. Or you can tell the BIOS to always come into this mode. And it'll bring up another menu. And, your computer is pretty much some sort of a console, like a stereo console. And it gives you access to all these other features. This takes it a step further by integrating a TV tuner card. And when you go into that, when you first boot the computer, and this menu supposedly comes up within 10 seconds.
Whoa.
So you don't have to worry about it. It's not like booting an OS at all. You're into the menu, and you have access to these capabilities. And from there, you can, say, record these episodes down to the hard drive, play this CD, audio CD, play the CD with MP3s on it, because you could fit hundreds of MP3s on the CD, and other features like that.
Very cool.
So if that's something that interests you, you might want to look into the Soyo SY-P4VAL version M.
That brings it all clear.
My God.
Soyo,
I think their website
board,
is,
basically.
I think their website is soyo.com.tw.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah.
Miles?
Yeah, this is my last item. Apparently the web is bankrupting, or not necessarily bankrupting, but it's really hurting the encyclopedia industry.
Why?
Back before the web, you had, or back before the internet came into its own, people were paying $1,400 for a hardbound encyclopedia set. And since everyone can now just hop on the net and type in a query onto Google and
get pseudo-realistic facts.
Right. Even the electronic versions, like the leading selling software package, software-based encyclopedia is Microsoft Encarta. And that
comes on a CD or maybe a DVD.
Right, and that's having a dramatic drop in sales. In fact, software encyclopedias have fallen 7.3% in revenue from 2003 to 2002, so just in 1 year.
Wow, 2002 to 2003.
Sorry.
2003 to 2004. 2002 to 2003. So 7% a drop in a market, that's pretty severe. And we're claiming that drop, or they're claiming that, the idea is that drop is happening because people are using Google and other search engines to find information of that sort online.
Right.
And the question I have is...
And hardbound encyclopedia publishers are really getting hit hard.
Right, I would assume.
You'd need to have your computer on and running the software to get in there and look it up.
Of course, you'd have to have that.
But, as encyclopedia, the full version is how many volumes? Hundreds
it's
now?
It's normally a letter.
It's
letter
like 20 or 30 volumes.
Yeah.
For the full, yeah.
So instead of having a 20 or 30 volume book set that after a year is out of date, after less than that is, there's another new version in another year, instead of spending $1,400 for that, normally people, of course, would get it every 5 years kind of thing, and that would be okay.
Yeah.
Instead of doing that, just the general concept is you don't need the real book, just look it up online. And I'm to
well,
some
for that
degree,
matter, you go to a coffee shop, and, they have internet access, and they have Google.
Right, and it's all free. All you have to do is have a computer.
Otherwise, you have to put the DVD in your drive and load up the application.
Yeah, and for $1,400, you can get a laptop. Can do this.
Encyclopedias are great to spend time on looking through and so on.
Yeah.
But if you need information quickly, Google's at your fingertips.
The thing I'm concerned about is that an encyclopedia is well-researched.
It's going to be much more comprehensive, and I don't think a lot of people realize that.
And that's the problem is that maybe people use encyclopedias normally for just general data. They don't go for that depth of knowledge. Prior to the internet, you're at home and you kind of want to know about a subject. What other source do you have an encyclopedia? Or calling the library and asking or visiting a library. I'm sure it's damaging libraries to some degree, too. I think that there's a new market. There's got to be a market for these companies that pride themselves on producing really good information. they've got to be able to produce something online that they can make money on.
Are you sure damaging libraries? Because libraries are a common form of internet access.
Changing libraries.
For example, when I was on a road trip recently, that was where I went. We would go tooling through, you know, through towns and going, oh, there's a library, and walk in. Sure enough, they had PCs for internet.
People aren't going to McDonald's, that's for sure.
No.
That's a story, too, this week. McDonald's in San Francisco is offering free wireless access. And, yeah, several news reporters have gone there. No one ever has a notebook.
Right.
Or is ever accessing the internet.
Right.
It's not doing very
Wait,
well.
Let me get this straight. Fatty food, and it's guaranteeing that you're going to be sitting down and not exercising?
Supersize your fries and your bandwidth. So, yeah, the other phenomenon I'm seeing, well, lack of, it's something that's just not happening, is software on DVD. It's just, I don't see it. It's never taken off.
Software,
I mean, there are games that still come out that require multiple CDs. You'd think it'd be easier for them to put it on a DVD, or maybe even offer a DVD version. Some have done that, but not very many. And today, you know, how many data DVDs do you have, Lyle?
Not very many at all. Only the ones I make.
My housemate just bought SUSE Linux, and it came with a DVD.
I mean, that's very surprising. I just never see it. And it hasn't taken off. DVD has taken off for movies.
It also came with multiple CDs. But
and DVD audio seems to be dead, too. I hear it's awesome. People are just starting to pick it up. But, you know, I think I was let down. I wanted to see more audio on, fit more of the audio rather than make it sound better.
Right.
CDs sound good to me as it is. And my stereo certainly can't support.
Yeah, but you don't have a perfect
DVD either. Audio. Yeah, that's for sure.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. If you have questions or comments, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We don't have to talk about the news. We can talk about your computer. You can give us a call, ask us some questions about what you want to do for upgrades or why you have a problem with X, and we'll try to answer you as long as you tell us what X is. Use the internet, visit geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then click on Send a Message, and we'll get that in our email. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geekspeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL, and with nationwide access. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. We are taking your calls, and you can call us right now. Phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. For questions and comments about your computers or technology in general, the geeks are standing by. You can, of course, use the internet, geekspeak.org. Click on The Geeks and then click on Send a Message. And we're going to go right into some email that we got recently. Let's see. Yeah, first off, early this morning, Robert emailed us using geekspeak.org. Click on The Geeks and send a message. And he asked, he said he loves the show, but now that he has a nighttime job, he can't normally listen to the show live, and recently found that we have audio archives online, and he was having some browser problems being able to download those and save them and burn them to disk. So let's talk a little bit about the archiving of Geekspeak. I've been archiving the show since we started about 3 years ago. Geekspeak was running before that as well, but I wasn't doing it then. So I record every show with a few misses here and there for technical glitches, but in general I've got a recording of pretty much every show, and I encode those to MP3 and put them up on geekspeak.org. And recently I made those archives available to anybody that goes to geekspeak.org and clicks on the show date, and then there'll be a little link that says 24 kilobits per second MP3 file. But basically, it's an MP3 file that you can use. There's a little bit of problem with the Geekspeak site right now. You click on that, sometimes you get a broken link and such. After you get that broken problem, just go into the browser again and hit return up in the title bar. It'll be okay. It'll work. And you're welcome to save those MP3s to your disks. You burn them to CDs, share them with friends, whatever. In fact, I encourage you to get your own copy and then share it that way. It's fine. It saves us some bandwidth. So any show of Geekspeak that you want to listen to, you're welcome to do that any time by going to geekspeak.org. And the shows are normally up about 5 hours or so after the show is actually done. It's not live. So that's the answer to Robert's question. Sean or Miles, do you have any items that we want to address from a caller or question? I've got one sitting in front of me if we want to do that.
Well, we just got an email from Bob Minville. Anyway, he wants to let us know that there is a computer recycling center at Gray Bears Senior Center. It's on Chanticleer Avenue. down the street from Sutter Medical Center.
Oh, good to know.
And they upgrade and resell older computers that can still be used.
Nice.
So that is Gray Bears Senior Center on Chanticleer Avenue.
Good, good. Nice to know. Thank you, Bob, for that.
We'll add that to our list online.
Yes, yes, we will. We also got a question about a shuttle, SN41G2. Basically, the question a while ago was, what memory should I be getting for my shuttle system? And specifically, a shuttle system is just a computer. But the question, the answer was answered by our geek in New York, Dee Dee Hubbard. Get good memory. If you're going to be building a new machine, the thing you don't want to skimp on is your memory. And the reason for that is cheaper memory can fail, and then you've got a memory stick that you really can't return. Memories are kind of like light bulbs. You can't really return it. You can do it, but it's a fight. The other part of that is memory that's good quality will work more efficiently in your system and allow your system to be a little faster. That's Dee Dee's response. And Geeks, do you agree with Dee Dee's response about good memory?
Yeah, good memory makes a big difference.
So, well, I'm a cheapskate. I get cheap memory, but at the same time,
your computer's slow.
Well, I will have memory problems, and I'll have to go back and get different memory, and it's that trade-off.
So. She recommends Corsair. No, she recommends. What does she recommend? I recommend Corsair.
You recommend Corsair?
Okay. I like Corsair.
She recommends Crucial.
Crucial. Yeah, Crucial. Crucial is probably going to be your best bet, actually.
Crucial memory. Crucial. It's called Crucial.
Yeah. Crucial is a very well-made memory. They've been around for a long time and very reliable. So if you need DDR333 memory, which I think is PC2700 or DDR400, I mean, that's the way to go. Now, if you want fast memory, it's going to be overclocked, but it's going to be the end-all, be-all fast memory you're going to buy. That's Crucial. That's Corsair.
Corsair. Okay.
I got some Corsair DDR400 that is 2.5 CAS latency, and that's the latency of the memory. The lower the number, the faster it's going to be. 2.5 DDR400 is screaming, and I haven't had a problem with it at all. It's good memory. So.
Good. Okay, so that's your recommendation.
If you're an enthusiast, go maybe want to look into the Corsair memory, and it usually comes with heat sinks on either side.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty intense stuff.
And if you're a little more subdued,
just want to make sure you want reliable memory, Crucial is a good way to go.
Great. And we have a call from Scott in Aptos. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
I was a fairly happy user of a Windows NT machine for about 6 years, and I just upgraded about a month ago. New machine that's running a XP Home that seemed to come installed with a blaster virus. so I'm wondering if it is possible to immediately get a virus on your first trip to the internet without opening an email attachment or downloading a file or anything.
Yes. the answer is yes. But go on.
Okay, I'm wondering, after all the hype, I was expecting a bit more out of XP Home, and I'm wondering how practical it would be to switch to Linux.
Linux?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, first off, your question about whether your machine can get infected right away. This is the crazy thing about Microsoft's stuff. There are so many viruses out there scanning machines and networks for weaknesses in Windows, that when you first get a Windows machine and you bring it up, and the first thing you want to do is you want to go to windowsupdate.microsoft.com to actually get the patches that fix your Windows, while you're connected, you are vulnerable, very vulnerable to viruses that are out there. And so I don't know the solution to that.
Other or worms in this case.
Worms.
Which
yeah.
Blaster is.
So basically, Blaster, there was some machine out in your local network probably that had this virus already, this worm, and it was scanning for ports that had this flaw. Your machine, of course, was brand new, didn't have the updates from Microsoft, had the flaw, got infected. I don't know if there's anything you can do about that, except, Miles, do you have a solution for how to...
I believe Microsoft makes available their service packs for purchase, like you can get a CD from them.
Yeah, you might want to do that.
I mean, it costs
and
money.
It's time. Yeah. And some time. The other thing you could do, of course, is have some kind of firewall. But I totally could see a service from a computer distributor recently around here that would anywhere that would say, bring your machine and we'll patch it up right away, and you'll be starting clean and fresh with protection.
Yeah, here's a question for you: are you running off of a modem or off of broadband?
A dial-up modem.
Okay.
I'm surprised that you got infected that way.
Yeah, that's what. Well, I don't know about that.
No, it's possible.
Because the worm is a lot smaller than the service pack.
That's true. That's true.
So, yeah.
It was the very first time I got on the internet. I got the RCP failure, NT authority shutdown, and they called the place where I got the computer, and they said, oh, you had a blaster worm, and gave me instructions how I got rid of it, and I've gotten rid of it, but I haven't had a long, normal, internet session since.
I'm
always getting disconnected.
Yeah, you might want to check with your local computer shop and see if, you know, you could, if they would be willing to, for a fee, I'm assuming.
Cleanse your machine.
Well, not just that, but because you just, I'm assuming, just made the system available, that you don't have much that isn't already backed up, that you reinstall the operating system, go to the computer shop, say, can you burn me a copy of the service pack onto a CD, take it home, do that, because then you're not waiting for Microsoft, you can do it locally.
Yeah, that's a good point. Getting rid of a virus or a worm that's on your machine, even though you follow the steps, it's kind of a difficult process. And to be able to do a clean install, make sure it's totally good, erase the entire thing, is a great, you have a good opportunity because you probably have no data on there yet. But if you're not interested in doing that, in any case, your question pertaining to what we're talking, going forward is, what happens now if you just want to switch over to Linux?
Right.
All right.
What do you use your computer for?
Photo-intensive stuff, Photoshop, sometimes several hundred megabyte size data files. I have a gigabyte of RAM on the machine. So,
are you a publisher?
No, a photographer.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Point number one, Photoshop does not run on Linux.
Photoshop version.
Right.
Oh, they don't have a version of that.
Right. And which version of Photoshop are you using?
I'm using 7 right now.
Okay, so that's the newer one.
You're probably a power user too, right? I mean, you probably know Photoshop pretty well?
Yeah, fairly well, yes.
Okay. If you were using an older version or were just starting out, I'd say that the program is called the GIMP. Looks and works just like GNU Image Manipulation Program.
It's basically a duplication of Photoshop, but it's from different it's an open source project.
Right, except the fact that it's a couple versions behind. It's probably closer to Photoshop 4 or 5.
Like when you were all excited about Photoshop 7, you got Photoshop 7, you're like, cool, all these new features, those new features won't be there. So it's kind of, to go away from Photoshop if you're a powerful user of Photoshop, I wouldn't recommend it.
Well, actually, when I got Photoshop 7, I was thinking, I paid $150 for this.
Oh, well, then maybe you could definitely try. The other thing is the GIMP, the application, is actually available for Windows. So you could go ahead and, right, Miles?
It is, but it's not quite there. I wouldn't recommend it yet for general usage.
What they call it, like an emulator software? Is there a way for like Linux to recognize Windows software?
No.
There is, but I wouldn't recommend it for something like Photoshop.
Photoshop's already kind of a dog performance-wise.
Uh-huh.
It would be much
for
slower.
Me, it actually isn't the performance issue. It's just the compatibility issues.
Oh, really?
And I don't know whether or not Wine would actually get it going. It may, but
my recommendation is if you wanted to be away from Windows and you wanted to run Photoshop, to get a Mac. Because you'll have a great experience for Photoshop on a Mac, and you won't have the viruses that Windows have. But, of course, that's a hardware.
And it's a lot more money.
It's the money, right. That's the reason I went to Windows originally, was, a value for the buck. Well, say I stick with XP, and my concern is, this is the target for all the recreational hackers out there.
Yeah.
And I'm using the Microsoft firewall. But I imagine, of course, that's going to be a target, too. So will a third-party firewall protect me from this kind of stuff?
Nothing will protect you 100%. The more you add to it, the more security you'll get. I would recommend making sure your Microsoft... The best thing to do when you're in Windows is to make sure your Windows is updated to the best extent. Have a virus protection software, something like Symantec, virus scanning software.
I use something that you guys recommended about a year ago, a free program called AVG.
Yeah, and make sure that definitions for AVG are up to date. And you probably know how to do that?
Yeah, I do that bi-weekly.
Okay, so that's as safe as you can be being on a Windows machine. You're doing fine.
If you were on a broadband line, I would, like DSL or cable, I would recommend that you had a DSL gateway kit, because that acts as a firewall. It's very easy to use, and it separates you.
But it's not going to be 100%.
No, that's not to say taking it in without any other measures, but that by itself has helped me immensely.
It doesn't hurt to have a software firewall.
Yeah.
On each of your computers, and if you do not have access to hardware firewall, or you don't want to spend the money on one, you can download a version for free from zonelabs.com that will give you pretty good protection. They have one with advanced features that you purchase, but that basic free version is pretty good.
And that's Zone Labs?
ZoneLabs.com. It's called Zone Alarm.
I'll check that out. And what you were saying originally about a clean install to totally get at any traces of a worm, does that mean I would have to reinstall all my other software?
Yes, but you don't have to do that.
It's not so much that you have to do that because to get rid of Blaster, for example. It's the fact that you may have something besides Blaster on your system. It's
that the computer, that the virus program doesn't recognize?
Right. I mean, you'll have... It's not likely, but it's one of those, if you start from scratch and start with a clean system.
I mean, imagine this.
Sure.
You build a new building, and the building's all beautiful. It's all stone and, you know, really nice grout, and everything's beautiful. Windows are all wood, and you know, wooden frames. Really lovely little building, okay? Someone comes in there with a wrecking ball and smashes through a wall. You go, ah! And you fix it. You fix the wall. You do it all right. Everything's cool. But it's not going to be the same as that new building. Is what nobody do. There's going to be little mistakes and little problems with it. And
stress fractures.
Stress fractures. Since you have the capability of just having the building again right away, why not? So that's kind of what we're talking about. But if it's more work for you to spend the time and the energy to do that, then just deal with the small fractures. It's not a big deal. It'll be okay, especially if you have the virus protection and all the updates on the machine. Thank you very much, Scott, for your call.
Thanks for your time. Bye.
And we have Janella from Carmel. Is that how you pronounce your name, Janelle?
Janelle.
Great. Hi. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thanks. I wish I was a geek, but I'm not.
That's okay.
Far from it. Darn it.
Just takes time and dedication.
I know just enough to be really dangerous to myself.
That was a fun time.
Yeah.
But yes, go on. What is your question?
Okay. I'm on Windows XP, and I just moved to California, so I went from cable to DSL. And I have lifetime support through Gateway. So I called the Gateway tech, and she said, because my Windows kept crashing, she said that I corrupted Windows because I switched from cable to DSL. So then we went in and tried to fix Windows.
Wait, had you actually switched from cable to DSL? Had you actually purchased DSL at home?
Well, I actually had a computer guy come to the house and hook me up through Netgear into the other computer in the other room. We tried through Linksys, but my Linksys system didn't work. So
DSL gateway. Yeah.
Okay, so you got a DSL gateway. Okay. Now, did you have digital cable before?
I had, I was on a cable system in Michigan.
Yeah.
Roadrunner, yeah.
Okay, so this tech for... So
the
basically,
Gateway's
saying,
crap.
Oh, well, yeah, basically, Gateway's, they're giving you incorrect information.
Okay, so it gets better. It gets better.
Okay.
So then she convinced me, since we couldn't fix my Windows, I think it was called fixing Windows, then she convinced me that what I needed to do was zero my hard drive. And I backed up my system before I moved here.
Mm-hmm.
But when I zeroed my hard drive, it zeroed out the whatever it was I used, the format I used,
okay,
to back up my system.
So you backed up your system on the same hard drive?
Yeah.
Oh.
Wait, was
so
it,
everything is gone.
Was it the same hard drive, or was it some other, or was it just the software?
It might have, or was it another partition, another drive letter?
The software I got that said Windows Backup came through Outlook Express or something like that.
Okay.
See, I'm such a novice.
Well, okay. When you ran that backup prior to you moving, did you have some kind of external hard drive or CDs that you made or anything like that?
I made CDs. I backed up my system making
CDs. Okay. But the software to use those CDs to restore your computer, you don't have. Or you
exactly.
don't know. Okay. All right. You've not lost your data. Everything's okay. Breathe. It's okay. Probably back up my PC is what you used, and it was possible. Sean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah.
Backup my PC through Outlook Express.
You know what? That first CD that you have, you have probably a whole bunch of CDs, and it's like backup CD. It's very possible that first CD will actually initiate the whole process of redoing your machine.
Well, see, I did it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I went in, and so when I put the first CD in now, it comes up with a README. So then I go into the... my computer, and then I go into
that
the CD.
Uh-huh.
I click on that, and then it I'm sorry, I'm in my car, or else I could tell you exactly what it says.
Fine. What does it say?
And then it comes up and says, you need the program that
right.
you
right.
need
and,
the
and,
software.
In that README, does it tell you the name of the program?
It's like a TXT or something.
Okay. The name of that, basically your Windows has been... How did you get your machine to work again? Did you install the software that came from Gateway?
No, because I lost all that information, too, because I threw all the boxes away.
Oh, so you don't have the original disks.
Right. So I had to go and buy everything, all new Windows Update and Norton Antivirus.
Because Gateway, Dell, they ship software that comes with the computer, and they probably
exactly.
installed that
okay.
backup software.
This is what you want to do, unfortunately.
No, I threw the boxes away, so I couldn't...
Right.
I have all these.
You should be able to give that software again. You should be able to call Gateway, tell them the computer that you purchased.
And that you need the software.
And that you need the software. And they should be able to get that back to you.
And what they say?
I did. And they said no. They don't have the key codes to give me.
Did they tell you at least what the program is?
No, they have no idea.
Oh, man. Why aren't computers easier?
I don't know, but...
Okay. So,
for a particular model computer, they should know what the software is.
They do, but they're not going to give her they're not going to give her the serial.
Usually they don't, just be able to find out what the name is.
Sounds like they're very lazy.
So what you need to do,
uh-huh.
unfortunately, is you need to call them back on the phone and say,
okay.
look, I've got lifetime support with you, therefore you need to help me. And basically what I need is, this is the model of the computer I have. It came with a whole bunch of software. I need to know the list of software that it came with. They will probably have that. They'll be able to give it to you. Once you have that, one of those is going to be backup software. And what you need to do is then go buy that program. Unfortunately. Does that make sense?
If they're not willing to give
it. Well, it does, but it's not that simple because I didn't even get that backup program until I...
Till later.
I know who might have it. Dr. Johnson gave me an update to Windows Word. It came through Word somehow. I think when he updated my system through Word, it was a little add-on in there.
Okay.
So...
I think that README should answer your questions. You're going to have to use that README. What I would do is I would find some geek that can come and support you. And where are you? You're in, Carmel?
Yeah, I'm in Pebble Beach.
I don't know of a place in that area, but you want to find your local. You can contact your local ISP and ask for a recommendation on someone that can come to your house and help you out. And they will go ahead and start working on it. You need a geek at this point.
I do need a geek.
You do?
I thought maybe I could go to Google and try to find the software through that.
You can definitely do that if you start knowing the names. But it depends on how much your time is worth. If you can get a geek in there to help you for 3 hours and spend a lot of money on them, they'll probably be able to support you and just handle it rather than you going ahead and doing the research. You can do a Google on the software, find the software, buy that software, and then it should use those CDs pretty easily.
Okay.
Good luck.
How do I find a geek? How do I do that?
I do it by – there's a couple different methods. Contacting your ISP might work, but
your internet service provider, the DSL company.
But another way to go is find like an electronics store in your area.
Okay.
You can do a Google on it too. Go ahead and go look for computer repair.
A lot of smaller computer stores have little bulletin boards.
Yeah.
You know, look for something like that.
And then you'll probably be able to find someone that does house calls.
Okay, great.
Good luck to know.
Thank you.
And we're going to switch right over to Eric from Santa Cruz. So, Sean, did you want to say something first?
No.
Okay.
We're getting a lot of email, though.
Yeah, I know. We'll get to it in just a second. Eric, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello. Thank you. I love your show. I'll be really quick. I know you got a lot of other people. But I was interested in making backups, quote-unquote, of my gaming console software, like the actual disk.
I don't know if anyone does that.
Okay, so
that
basically, I don't know if there is software that does it legally, but there are ways to burn your disks. But the question is, can your machine then use those burned disks? And normally they can't.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed in the past.
What you want to do is you're getting into that realm where you're a citizen that wants to make sure that this thing you've paid for you have, and you're going to try to make a duplication of it. It's equivalent to, I have a book and the book pages are made really flimsily, so I want to Xerox it so that I have an extra copy in case the pages start ripping apart or my son throws it in the pool. So you've got a need. You're a citizen that has a need. Then you want to try to find to do this. Well, there's companies, basically, the companies that are producing this stuff, they don't want you to copy it because if you copy it, then there's more potential for you sharing it with someone else and them not getting revenue or you not having to buy another copy later. So there's, in general, you're in that realm where you want to do something legally that is in the realm of hacking and maybe is not legal. So you need to start becoming a hacker and someone that's on that border. to do that kind of thing. And that's where free software comes into play that people have created to specifically duplicate games. You might have to have your machine console modified a little bit. What you can do is wherever you're buying games, if there's a local store that sells games that's like a small shop, they'll have solutions for you. But in general, you need to figure out, I mean, it's hacking, and I can't get into details because I don't do it personally.
There's a company
on games
called Elaborate Bytes, although I think the software was sold to another one. The software is called Clone CD.
Yeah, look for Clone CD. That would do it.
It offers that kind of capability because they're made a different way. And actually, some of those discs aren't CDs, they're DVDs. So you would need some sort of a DVD recorder to do that. But look for Clone CD online.
I did see something. Are you familiar with XCopy?
Yeah, there's DVD XCopy. That's for copying movies.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it did games, too.
Yeah, because games have they're made differently.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about the software, not the hardware.
Okay.
And you just got to find the right software that can do it.
And
Clone CD might be it, but I think there might be an injunction against that software, too.
Yeah.
And DVD XCopy, there's an injunction against selling that software as well.
I see.
So the industry's cracking down on that kind of software.
Good luck, Eric.
One more comment.
Yes, quickly.
I loved it when your show time was in the afternoon after work when I could hear you more often.
So did we.
So I just want to throw that out there.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you.
And, of course, if you're like Eric, if the morning is hard, you can go to geekspeak.org and look at our archives there so you can listen to the show whenever you want. We have Chris from Santa Cruz. And, Chris, what is your question, Chris?
Hello?
Hello, yes, you're on air.
Hi, yes. I just bought a used Mac Cube, and I want to replace the DVD ROM with a Super Drive.
Right.
But I've read somewhere online stating that people are having problems with playing movies from different regions, that after a certain number of times it locks into a certain region.
Correct.
And
yes.
I was wondering if there's a Super Drive you can buy that doesn't have that problem. Because I watch movies from Europe and Japan. And
okay, you have to go into a hacking mode as well. Basically, the movie industry, when they released DVDs, they made a very clear mandate that there would be certain regions, and DVD players, people that got legal license to produce DVD players had to join this consortium, and in general, you had to make sure that DVD player could only play from one region. And the way that they did that was they write all this code, and they do all these neat things to lock it into one region after a period of time. Now,
the reason there are regions is to deal with copyrights, because copyrights
right.
are different in various regions.
Right.
And so the only way to track movies.
So a film industry can go ahead and sell a movie to, East Asia and say, okay, Southeast Asia, you've got the rights for this. Go ahead and produce the heck out of it.
But North America does not have the rights.
Right. So then you would be able to buy a DVD from Southeast Asia and pay money there instead of paying money to the local companies, and therefore there was conflicts
It's a money issue also.
It's a money issue.
The cost of the movie is different in different regions.
Right. So basically they just went, okay, fine, we'll just make sure.
But it also doesn't anticipate that you can go to school in Europe or somewhere else and take your computer with you.
Their solution in that case is buy two DVD players. So the good thing is there's software out there that defeats this, and it's illegal. And or it's on the borders of being legal. And basically you use the software to make sure that your DVD player is always just playing the right thing. But it's hard whether you get into hardware.
No, yeah, the software, not so much. It's still...
DVD players in your computer normally don't have restrictions.
There's a hardware key in modern DVD ROM drives.
The most recent DVD ROM drives are going to lock after a period of time. You better make sure that you lock it the way you want it. I would not get rid of your old DVD player, and then you'll be okay. So make sure they're two different regions. You play DVDs on one type.
Yeah, do a search online, maybe DVD region and the hardware that you have. And
yeah,
the only solution really is to chip it, to you're actually changing
modify
the hardware modification.
So basically there's small modifications. You open up the DVD player and you modify it. And that's about all we can
say. And I'm not going to recommend that you do that.
Don't do it.
Because the other thing I don't understand is, aren't there all region DVD players?
There are. Yeah,
Why can't you have a DVD player for your computer that plays all regions?
You can. Maybe no one's produced it. Maybe you're having trouble finding it. But it's possible to do that. And basically you pay for all the regions. Chris, thank you for calling in to GeekSpeak.
Wish we had a better answer for you.
I wish we did.
Yeah.
And I wish we had more time to take more calls. One quick question someone asked, actually the webmaster for KOSP asked, how do you back up photographs on DVDs? Do you need to burn more than one copy? And the answer to that is, if you want to make sure that you have it, go ahead and make two copies. But remember that over time, your copy is not necessarily going to be playable in new stuff. How frustrating is that? So backing up is another wonderful show subject I'm sure we'll have to cover in the near future. But not today on GeekSpeak, unfortunately. Miles and Sean, thank you very much for joining me today on GeekSpeak.
Glad to be here.
Yep. Hopefully we'll answer your other questions, those of you out there online.
Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. The geeks today were Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. To those of you that called in, thank you for making GeekSpeak what it is. To do this, we do the show because we love doing it, and thanks for calling in so that we can do it. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBH San Auto, or on the web at kusp.org. For GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Fine Print with Jen Ramage is coming up next, followed by State of the Arts, and then my favorite music show, Two Steps in the Blues with Charlie Lang. Friday's a great show, a great day to listen to KUSP. Stay tuned now for Fine Print.